Welcome to Programming in Tongue, a podcast of the Universal Translator Assistant Project. Welcome back to Programming in Tongues. This podcast is my attempt to mix computers and constructed languages together. I'm Joel, otherwise known as Mr. Klingon, and this podcast and my other Klingon, a Klingon word from the word, are my ongoing attempt to experiment with the medium of podcasting and some of my own interests in xenolinguistics, the languages of alien races from science fiction. For tonight, I wanted to cover a couple topics. One is to look over some of the reasons why people are involved with constructed languages. What are the purposes and reasons they use them? I'm going to be borrowing some material that I presented a number of years ago in a short class on constructed languages. I'd also like to look at an interesting project that uses languages that provides one common phrase in multiple languages. And finally, I'll end with a very quick all-purpose introduction to Klingon. Let's start out. Why make up languages? Well, there's lots of reasons. Their reasons can be linguistic research, artificial intelligence, international communications, psychiatry, secret languages, and fiction and art. Let's take a look at some of those reasons. Well, the first I mentioned was linguistic research. Linguists sometimes make up toy languages, languages to study the ways in which people learn real language. Especially created language has the advantage that its rules and makeup can be easily controlled. The model language is then taught to a group of people, and their ability or inability to learn it, or its effect on how they communicate their ideas and feelings, can be studied. It gives some insight into how real, or what are called natural languages, work. Now, the next reason that might be for constructing a language is artificial intelligence. That is, working with computers and trying to see how they might think. Can they think? Scientists who wish to make computers behave more intelligently need to communicate human ideas to the computer. And in order to do that, they need a special language that the computer can understand. Computers don't do very well with English and other natural languages. Another kind of computer language is something could be called a pivot language. It's used for computers to translate from one language to another. There's a nice tool called Erlang that you can find. I'll put a link in the show notes for this. Erlang uses Esperanto in this way by having like English to Esperanto and Swedish to Esperanto dictionary. And by putting those two together, you can translate English into Swedish. Basically, for every language, every target language, there's an Esperanto to that language dictionary, and the program, Erlang, puts those two together and lets you move from English to French, or English to German, or German to Spanish, because it will translate the German word into the known Esperanto word, and then take the Esperanto word and translate that into the Spanish, if that was your target. It's an interesting tool, and it's a useful way to get quite a few multi-language dictionaries with less cost than actually having to make a unique dictionary for each language pair. Now, because computers are very, very literal, we need special languages. Humans need special languages to teach them what we want to do. They don't necessarily look like natural languages, but they aren't hard for humans to learn, to read, and to write. Computers then have no trouble understanding them. They tend to be unambiguous, that when you say something in Perl or Basic or C, there's only one way that the computer can interpret it, unlike English, where we get a lot of mileage out of wordplay and puns. Next reason people introduce or create new languages is for international communication. To create a language that is common to more than one person without being rooted in any one nation or political structure It has no native speakers who might try to force it on other people that they are trying to conquer, either in force or by ideas. One encyclopedia entry about this said that an international language is any of several languages, naturally or deliberately constructed, used to facilitate communications among people with different native languages. Many attempts have been made to construct artificial universal languages based on elements of natural languages with simplifications of grammar and spelling. Volupuk was devised in 1880 by the German bishop Johanna Martin Schleyer, and Esperanto was invented in 1887 by a Polish physician Ludwig Zamenhof, were both based on a combination of Latin, the Romance languages, and the Germanic languages. Volupuk eventually proved too difficult to learn and to use. Esperanto is still the most widely spoken of the artificial languages. Interlingua, created in 1951 by the International Auxiliary Language Association, is derived from English and the Romance languages. It's primarily been used in international scientific and technological journals, thus eliminating the need for costly multiple translations. I know I've heard this explained to me that in some cases a language like Esperanto is useful because if you write a textbook in Esperanto, many people across different nations can learn from that textbook. Now, what has usually happened is some language like English or French or whatever the widely spoken international language is will often serve the same function. The problem with that is that it has associated baggage, you know, political and cultural things that are tied to the primary users of that language. So an artificially constructed language eliminates some of that, although as you may have noticed, many of these languages are primarily European-based languages. So you still have a cultural influence that is behind the language. Now, another reason people create languages is psychiatry. Some psychiatrists have used constructed languages by looking at how a patient takes their normal language and reinvents it or replaces it. They gain insights into their patients' minds. It's sort of similar to the linguistic research with languages, but in this case it is taking something that is constructed and seeing how it's altered and gives you a way of understanding the psyche of the patient. Secret languages are another reason for constructing them. Everyone knows at least one secret language, or I should say, everyone a osne et a eastle unwe ecritse anguagele. Big Latin is only one of many ways that people invent languages, often just rearranging their own language to confuse eavesdroppers. More complicated languages, or shorthand, can also be used to shorten messages, as well as keep important information secret. In the days of telegrams, many companies issued code books where common phrases were reduced to short words. My mother-in-law actually traveled when she was a small child with her father, who was a salesman, and she has memories of actually having the job for her dad of composing the messages that would be sent by telegram. Now, in some cases, companies had their own secret book. In other cases, it was purely for the financial reason of shortening the message by having single words replace phrases, thereby paying less to the company. Now, this actually resulted in sort of a back-and-forth warfare between the telegraph companies, who realized that they were losing money, and they at first insisted that all the words in a telegram had to be dictionary words, because people were writing gibberish words to stand for certain phrases, and that was costly, not only because it was stealing revenue if you were paying by the word, it also was harder for the telegraph operators to transmit, because if I'm transmitting the word baseball, I know the word, and if I misspell one letter, like an E or something, the receiver can still reconstruct what the original word was. But if I have a gibberish string of characters and the receiver looks at this word and misplaces one letter, they might drastically alter the meaning of the message. Finally, the reason that I mostly look at when I'm considering constructed languages is for fiction and art. And this is both for people who are authors and for people who just are language hobbyists. They make up languages for fun. People who want to tell stories, especially science fiction stories, often like to dress up their creations with languages that complete the illusion of a whole world different from the one we inhabit day to day. Hundreds, if not thousands, of people have done this as a hobby. Now, the popular, well-known example today is a Klingon hole, otherwise known as the Klingon language, which a linguist named Mark Okrand developed basically for hire for Paramount, for the people who were making the Star Trek movies. As a result, from his original work back for the movie The Search for Spock, there's now a community of Klingonists who are active on the internet, exchanging messages every day in Klingon, as well as messages about the language and the culture of this imaginary race. J.R.R. Tolkien is an older example, and in some ways a more classic example of this. He was a linguist himself. By some accounts, wrote The Lord of the Rings partly to use his imaginary languages. There are many people today who are knowledgeable in the language. A number of them were actually employed by the makers of the trilogy recently. Now, people like to do interesting things with languages. There is a well-known project, at least among the constructed language community, called the Babel Project, which has taken upon translating Genesis 11, the story of the Tower of Babel, into as many languages, real and imaginary, as possible. In a takeoff from that, another project was started by a person named Ethan Mollick. His original website has kind of disappeared. You can find it in the Internet Archive, the Wayback Machine, it's called. But there is a resurrected version of his page on GeoCities. I've got a link in the show notes. And he created the I Can Eat Glass Project. The project is based on the idea that people in a foreign country have an irresistible urge to try to say something in the indigenous tongue. In most cases, however, the best a person can do is, "Where is the bathroom?" a phrase that marks them as a tourist. But if one can say, "I can eat glass, it doesn't hurt me," you will be viewed as an insane native and treated with dignity and respect. Or at least people will be very careful around you and not try to get away with anything. Anyway, the website, if you go look at it, I have links to that, and you'll find quite a few different versions. You'll find in Arabic, I'll apologize in advance for my pronunciation, in translated Algerian Arabic, it would be Naqtar Naqul Ezjaj Umau Yujjaj. In Danish, Jeg kan spise glas, det går ikke ondt på mig. In Dutch, it is Ik kan glas eten, het doet geen pijn. Or in German, Ik kan glas essen, ohne mir weh zu tun. I encourage you to take a look at that page and see if you can learn a few of those phrases, just in case you're traveling to a country where you would like to impress the people as an insane native. Finally, here's a few useful words to start with if you happen to find yourself among Klingons. These are three phrases which will at least get you started. Hello, goodbye, and finally, huh. Nuch nech is how you say hello. Literally means, what do you want? Nuch is the word for what, and nech is to want. Nuch nech. Next is goodbye, usually is rendered as kapla, meaning success, literally. And finally, the way to point and ask or indicate that you didn't understand what a person indicate, you say nuch jat. You'll hear the nuch, meaning what, again. And jat is the word for say, to speak. So basically you're saying, what did you say? You can also say nuch and point to things if you're saying, what is this, in a very simple fashion. That wraps it up for this week's Programming in Tongues. I'd encourage you to go visit Podcast Alley, where you can cast a vote for Programming in Tongues. It's the month of October, and as few votes as I get, I'd appreciate anyone who is interested in giving me a vote. You can vote for every single podcast you listen to, because the votes are just added to the total for each podcast. So you can vote for Podcasting, Programming in Tongues. You can vote for A Klingon Word from the Word. You could go visit my friend's podcast, Sturgeon's Law, from Random Smith. and give him a vote. You can give every single podcast, like I say, that you listen to a vote. That's at Podcast Alley. Thanks for listening.